Let's do it.
Okay, well, welcome everybody to the Quill Inquiry podcast. This is week 8, I believe. I am Brandon Hall, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Ash, who is excellent at reminding me things that I forget to do all the time. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good for a Tuesday. How about you?
Same. Like I said, it's been a busy week already, yeah. Even though it's like the first day back to work, but last week was busy too, and just going to be a busy summer for me, but
understand.
All good things. It's not busy in the good. Bad way, so.
Hey, we'll take it.
Yeah. Well, we have some fun topics to talk about this week. We have, I think, more. So last week we had fewer topics than usual, and it looks like this week we have more than usual, so we're kind of balancing it out a little bit. But some of the topics we're going to get into are characters, dialogue, world building, and even like publishing timelines and, you know, trying to time the market, which I think you did some good research on. So excited to dive into that. But before we dive into our topics, our reading check-in. Ash, what are you reading?
I am reading The Witchstone by Henry Neff. It is an ARC book that I have. I am loving it so far. It is very funny, very urban fantasy-esque, two points of view, and I'm really excited to see where it's going. What about you? What
awesome. Are you reading? I am still reading the same books from last week because I just started them. The Last Argument of Kings, which is the final book in the First Law trilogy by Joe Abercrombie. And then I am ARC reading Tainted Seas by local pirate captain S.M. Campbell, who's also working on the anthology with us. So very exciting reads. I just started them, though, so that's probably going to be my reads for the next few episodes.
Totally. Yep. I think this will be the same for me. It'll just be the Witchstone for the next month because reading habits are hard.
Yeah. Well, next up, we just have we have some podcast updates. It's not like an official update. I don't have anything to share just yet, but Ash and I are working on some official social media accounts for Quill and Query, like a designated Instagram and TikTok page. Just kind of working on the details and getting some content ready to put on those pages so they're not just empty. But yeah, we will get those up as soon as we can. It's kind of a little side project for the podcast. Don't really have a timeline for it yet, but we will definitely keep you guys updated when that is available. And then probably post most of the official podcast news and updates on those pages. We don't have any audience questions to go through this week, but we do have two indie releases to spotlight that just released over the past 2 days. Ash, I think you found these, so I think it's only fair that you could share them.
I did. I stalked your post, your TikTok, to make sure that we didn't miss anything. So, yes, two releases from this week. Lux's Lullaby, book 2, which is titled The Lux in Quest by Cara Blaine, came out May 27th, so yesterday. And then The Realms of Zoria, book 1, Star Wielder by Anna Wyatt, which came out May 26th. So congrats to our small little book publishers.
Yeah, very cool. Congratulations on the new releases. Those are very recent. Best of luck to both of those authors. And can't wait to see what else they do. All right, I think we can move into our indie publishing and business/books topics. We got some interesting ones here today. Yeah. Let's start with this one, cover design. This is one of my favorite parts. I will design covers all day, but yeah, every book needs a cover. And I think every author has kind of, you know, their own vision for what they want their cover to look like. You know, no matter how far your story is in development or how far you are in writing it, I at least for me, I always have an idea for the cover almost immediately.
But do you really?
Yes, I do.
Interesting.
That's like one of the first things that comes to me. Like sometimes I'll think of a cover before I even think of like a solid plot for the story. It's so
really?
Weird. I wonder.
That's so cool.
It might be because I'm a web designer, and so I'm very visual, very visual person. So you know that might be where that comes from.
Sure.
But, yeah. So, Ash, when it comes to covers, I know neither of us are published yet, but are you like me? Do you already have a cover in mind for your A Filthy Hunger, or is that going to be like the very last thing on your list to do?
That's on my last thing of to-dos. I don't know. I that's an interesting question. I never really even think about it. I do have character art that I have hired a fantastic artist to do for my two main characters. So it's nice to have that visualization. I tend to focus on like character art first. Book, but I don't know. I don't really, I know what I don't want. I know what I dislike. And no offense to anybody of the things that I dislike. It's just like, stylistic changes and differences. So I know what I don't like, but I don't really know what I want the book cover to be like. The aesthetic, yes, but I don't, yeah, no, that's not something I really consider. So I love that you do. I feel like that's interesting. I wonder how many people also feel the same way, like, oh, cover design is like the first thing I go to versus like, the last.
Well, actually, you made a comment about you know what you don't like. So tell us a little bit about what you don't want for your book cover.
I do not like characters on the front of the book. Regardless of how great the art is, I just feel like that gives away, I don't know, I like to visualize the characters first, when I'm reading, and I don't really want any influence. If I read like a quarter of the way through and I'm still kind of having a hard time visualizing, I'll look up fan art. But yeah, I don't like characters on the front. I don't like a lot of the gilded words that we're seeing now, like a lot of like the kind of like flora around the edges with like gilded big words. I'm not I I'm just I to me that's kind of overdone at this point. But also popular for that reason because I feel like it does appeal to a lot of people. So yeah, though I think those are the two main ones that I'm just like not a fan of. I have no I can't even like off the top of my head tell you what I would want a Filthy Hunger's book cover to look like. So what about you? I mean, what do you give us your if you don't mind, like what's your visualization of the book cover for yours?
So I've actually been talk I've talked to a couple cover artists just to kind of, get an idea of price and stuff like that, for A Knight of Knives, and I have two ideas for A Knight of Knives, and I'm trying to think of how I can successfully use both. But one is does have a character on the cover, which normally I'm not a fan of, but there are two books in particular that I have on my shelf. I have only read one of them, but they both do, I think, the character on the cover really well, and they capture like the exact feel that I would want for A Knight of Knives if I went with a character focused cover. There's like a guy in a position of power sitting on, it's like some type of throne usually, and the facial expression is very like brooding, very deep in thought, and it conveys a lot about the story on the cover, about what this who this character is and what they're going through and kind of their position of authority. And I thought that would be very fitting for A Knight of Knives, considering Theron's position of power and the weight on his shoulders. But at the same time, I'm not usually a fan of that kind of art, so I kind of just have to, see when it's done, if it feels right. But another idea I have is I like object focused covers that kind of don't give away too much about the plot. I think the perfect example of this, I feel like I never shut up about A Song of Ice and Fire, but I like those covers just because they're really basic, but I feel like they look nice and they kind of communicate, enough about the story without being too spoilery or anything, I guess. Like, you still need to read to figure out what's going on. But yeah, to me, the most important thing is that the cover tells the reader what kind of story this is going to be, without giving too much away. But no, I do kind of agree with that character point that it's very hard for me to find art that captures the way I visualize my character. So I imagine it's the same for like a reader when they read about a character and then they see a different depiction on the cover. So I am a little cautious of that, but I think that might be the route I take to try it out with A Night of Knives when that's done in 2035.
Yeah.
But,
No, sooner. Don't say
sooner,
that.
Sooner. I meant 2025.
There we go. Much better.
But yeah, those are my thoughts on covers for my stories. But I kind of want to get your opinion on covers, like, from a reader's perspective, like when you're going to the bookstore. Is there anything that you like won't buy because of the cover, or are you not that picky? Because I'm certainly that picky.
Yeah, so I hate the phrase "don't judge a book by its cover." I think I said this in one of our previous episodes. I 100% judge a book by its cover. Again, I'm going to avoid like a lot of character bait unless it's a book that I know I'm excited to see or read from somebody I know. I really just stay away from like character art, especially the kind of for romance, like the more like paper cut kind, like very simplistic designs of like the two characters on the cover. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
What I really look for is like unique art. So for instance, like Leigh Bardugo's newest novel, The Familiar, I think is like a Renaissance hand holding something with like beautiful embossment on the cover. I'm looking for something like that. Or even Brandon Sanderson's like newer renditions of like Mistborn, where it's like the full book cover itself is like a piece of art.
Yeah.
I really like that. That's when I'm like, oh, I don't mind if there's like a character, if it's like in a painterly style, in a more like stylistic way. So yeah, that's kind of what I look for. I'm just going to stay away mostly from like super guilt. I don't know if it looks like every other type of like book on the shelf,
yeah.
It's not going to stick out to me and I'm not going to feel compelled to, you know, to read
yeah,
it.
Right.
So, I do like object based book covers. I think like, you know, like I think Holly Black's are a good example of what I enjoy. It's like a crown and then a sword going through it, or
yeah.
like, you know, something like that. It gives some aesthetic hint at what the book's going to be like, but not giving away too much. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, if it's going to be interesting enough. And I think it's funny because I think in like general fiction, not necessarily fantasy, the book covers have gotten so much more cool and like avant-garde and artistic,
yeah.
and fantasy's having a harder time catching up. In my opinion,
yeah.
I think we're kind of stuck in like this weird, like I said, gilded, crowns and swords and knives. No offense to Knight of Knives.
Yeah.
But like, that's just, it's a fantasy. So we
yeah,
know there are going to be swords involved. So how do we convey that? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. No,
what about you? What are you gonna avoid?
So I can't buy a book that has like a photo from the adaptation. It just bothers me. I don't like it.
Oh. Yes.
It's
great
never
great one.
If
I
they
forgot
picked,
about that.
If they picked good photos, I feel like I wouldn't have. But it's always like, uh-oh, I lost you. Oh, there you are.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. No, if like I wish they would pick better photos because I feel like it's not a bad idea. They just always pick like the most basic image still, and it never looks good in my opinion. And then it's always accompanied by the big Netflix sticker, which I recently complained about in a post.
Oh
but,
God, yes, the sticker life. Don't get me started.
They started just printing them on, so you can't even like try to peel them off anymore. It's that which is even worse in my opinion. But
yeah,
I also stay away from photo covers in general unless they're like really well done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like just a photo stock image of a guy that looks like it was ripped off Adobe stock on my fantasy
yeah.
covers.
Yeah, agree.
But actually going back to the character art too, if I find that the cover art clashes with like the tone of the story, I will look for a different cover. I've noticed that with a lot of like fantasy stories is they kind of have almost this, and not to be like mean to anybody, but some of them have like an art style that's almost cartoonish and suggests it's like more geared towards younger audiences, and then you'll read the content
yeah.
of the story and it's a lot darker than you're led to believe. So I think capturing
Great.
The tone on the cover is really important. I definitely look for unique ones that stand out, like you said, that don't look like everything
mm-hmm.
else on the shelf. I like
mm-hmm.
the one that you mentioned too, Leigh Bardugo. I love all of her covers. I think the one for
Me
Ninth
too.
House was really cool with the way the snake
love
was
the snake.
Embossed.
Oh, and then the hair.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those were
yes,
really
yes.
cool. I have not read the books, but I have them both because I like the covers so much, and I did like
Yeah,
the
they're really
premise
good.
of the story. But
Yeah.
like Nicole said, I will pick up a book. I don't know if I'll buy a book just for the cover, but I'll definitely pick it up off the shelf and read it
Yes.
to see if it's something
Agreed.
for me. But yeah, I think.
But, and also, going off of what Nicole said, I also am tired of florals. Like, okay. Like, yeah, flowers. Wow. Great. We know. But yeah, those are great things to avoid. I'm sure other people have different opinions, but yeah, stay away from them.
Yeah, everyone has different opinions on covers. I also stay away from the very obviously AI covers, but I haven't seen a lot of those, so
Me neither.
thankfully. But yeah, that's our th those are my thoughts on cover design. Is there anything else you want to add to that before we move on to the next topic?
No, just that pastel cartoon YA romance, totally agree. Nicole is going to completely turn me off as well, like you were saying, Brandon, too, which is like the kind of like cartoony looking characters. It's like, no. If I want cartoons, I'm gonna go to a like comic, like a YA comic or whatever. But yeah, I think that's it.
Well, I'm actually gonna skip over this next
Oh, did we
topic.
lose you?
Just,
We lost you for a second, Brandon.
am I still here now? Are we good?
Uh-oh. Did we lose it for a second?
Think so. How's my.
Okay, I think we're back.
Are we back? Okay. I'm waiting to talk because I don't know if I'm in or not.
Oh no.
Nicole says she can see us both. I just lost
How
Ash.
are I lost both of us for a second. It's telling me that mine is bad and now it's
Okay.
gone away. So
All right.
I think
Technical
we're
difficulties.
back. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties.
No worries. Okay, I'm gonna actually skip over this second topic, Ash, because I think I can move that one to next week just to make sure we don't run out of time. But
Sounds good.
I think these last two are a little more important, or a little more fun to talk about. Chasing trends. So with any industry, especially like entertainment industries and publishing, there are market trends. People will like right now, romanticism is really big. So as with any business, it's important to keep those in mind, but how much of a factor do market trends play in you deciding like what stories to write and what you want to publish?
That is, I don't know. This is a hard one. I have always been a fairy girl, right? Like the fae, the folklore of the fae, the fantasy of like elves and creatures, like very Lord of the Rings based. That's always been my kind of genre. And so with the rise of people like Sarah J. Maas, and even Holly Black, love her though, but I felt like she did that first in terms of bringing that kind of into the mainstream. Middle grade slash older YA space. I always worry with writing A Filthy Hunger that I am going to be too on the trend or too late to the trend of like the group of creatures in mine is very similar to like Greek gods slash fae. And so I'm just worried that that is going to be like, oh, you're just jumping on the bandwagon, even though I've been writing this novel for 10 years through various iterations, through very many plot changes and character changes and all this kind of stuff. So that's, yeah, that's a big, like, nerve-wracking thing in the back of my head as I write, is that I'm going to not get accused, but people are going to think that this story is coming off of the back of other people. And the popularization of what they have done. So that's kind of where I try and just be like, look, this is just my story, and I'm trying to tell it, and it just so happens to coincide during a time of the rise of like fae, fairies, kind of like Northern European folklore influenced novels. Also, in terms of like the trends of spicy writing or whatever, like A Filthy Hunger has romance included in it, and I don't shy away from being very like open about there will be scenes like that, only because it's going to be important to both of the characters, like learning how to be vulnerable with one another. But I worry that I'm also going to, like, it's going to feel like I'm doing this in order to sell books, despite the fact that it like doesn't happen in book one, spoilers. But you know, like, it's just gonna be like, oh, that she's doing this. I don't know. That it's just a worry. I don't know if I'm explaining myself very well.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I don't try to think about or include trends in my writing at all. I just kind of stick with what I know and what like feels good and what goes with my gut. I know some people tend, like, especially those who write like just romances or feel good, like feel good low fantasy romantices, that they do have some have a finger on the pulse of like what people are really enjoying, and they kind of track the trends and then write to that. I don't think there's anything bad about that. I think that's especially if you're trying to make a living and it's something you're doing for fun. That's totally obviously allowed. People do that, but it doesn't have any influence in my writing.
No, I like what you said about worrying that people might think you're just trying to jump on those trends.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of always in the back of my mind too, because I don't actively try to chase those trends in my writing. Sometimes I feel like what the market likes at a certain time will coincide with what I'm working on, but
Yeah.
that's not always really intentional. Sometimes it's just coincidence. So yeah,
Yeah.
I think, I don't think it's wrong to try and chase those trends. If, writing is your business and you're trying to earn a living off of it, if it works for you, then great.
Yeah.
I'm such a slow writer that I would always be late to the trends. So
I know. Yeah, same.
I wouldn't even be able to try and capitalize on it, at least not in a quality way. But
Yeah.
yeah, that's really all I have to say on it. I don't actively try to chase the trends, and if it naturally happens, then cool, but otherwise I just write what I want
Yeah. Great. Same. Yeah. Screw those
to
trends.
write. Well, this one is going to be mostly you, Ash. You did a lot of research, it looks like, on this topic. This was a question. Correct me if I'm wrong, but did someone bring this up in chat last week? Or was it just something we kind of stumbled on in our own discussion?
It was that. It was
Okay.
the latter. No one asked this, but it came at the towards the end of last episode, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. We were talking about just like publishing in general. I can't remember the specifics, but yes, the topic I said, oh, that would be great to research for next week's episode. And the question is, when is the best time to self-publish? So I did a little bit of digging. There aren't a lot of hard statistics in terms of numbers that I saw. I couldn't get consistent sources correct. Like, oh, some had some numbers, some had the other. So I looked at Medium, and then I looked at Forbes, which were the most popular articles to look at via Google. So the question is, when is the best time to publish? According to Medium, the process of book discovery, browsing, and purchasing takes time and doesn't usually happen during the holidays, which I thought would be the opposite. I thought that would be a good time to publish books. Though it can be a great time to release a second or third book, for first time self-published or indie published authors, the holidays are a no-go. Apparently, the perfect time for self-publishing are between the months of February and September.
Interesting.
And then Forbes kind of backed this up. So here's some cool parameters. Between January and March are the best time for self-help, self-improvement, finance, or diet culture books. It's a horrible time for kids' books or YA books because kids are starting to get back into school, and they've also just received their Christmas presents or their holiday presents, and so they're not really interested in going and spending their cash or receiving more post-Christmas or post-holidays. April through June is the best for kids' books, and then fiction novels of any kind for like beach and vacation reads. Kids are at the end of their semesters usually. So apparently that's a very good time for them. And then through July and September is apparently once again a good time for finance and self-help books, as people want to make changes with the season, with the upcoming holidays, as they hang out with family more. So for us, fantasy or like smaller indie publishing, it seems like between April and June are the
Okay.
best time to release your first novels.
Interesting. That some of that I was expecting, like the summer period, I not too shocked by, and the self-help books, being popular the early period of the year, when everyone's trying to make good on their resolutions, that makes sense. But no, I was totally expecting the holiday period to be bigger. Like, obviously don't publish like at the end of December, but I would think like November, December, early December would be the perfect time. I get books for Christmas. Maybe everyone else doesn't. But that's
So, yeah, I thought the same exact thing. And I think the difference is most people, and I also receive books for Christmas, obviously. But it makes sense for well-established, industry-known authors or even self-published indie authors who, like I said, are on their second or third books who have a following already and can promote and then say, like, oh, there's 10% off for the holidays. But for first-time newbies like us, that is not the best time because people are going to want to buy their favorites instead of
Makes
buying
sense.
something new and taking a risk or gamble. So, yeah, pretty fascinating stuff.
Well, those are all good things to know. I've always tried to shoot for either summer or holiday, so maybe I'll adjust that moving forward for the anthology and then for my debut, but we'll see how things align.
Gotta get those timelines right, you know what I mean?
But yeah, that's all our publishing topics for today. Like I said, I'm gonna move one of them to next week, just so we don't run out of time for our writing topics, because we have a lot of topics this week. So, but that's a good problem to have. But before we get into the individual writing topics, our work in progress check-in. Ash, you have some exciting news on yours.
My partner walked in yesterday and he was like, "What's up?" And I was like, "I finally finished chapter 7 of A Filthy Hunger, and it has taken me 6 months to do so." And he was like, "Holy shit." And I was like, "This is crazy." He's like, "How do you feel?" And I said, "It feels kind of good." So I am finally over. This is the farthest I've ever gotten with this book. I hit chapter 7 over a year ago and hated everything about all of the chapters, so I started from scratch. And I think I've mentioned before, I'm not someone who can jump around, so I cannot like jump ahead chapters. I have to go chronologically. So a huge feat, a huge accomplishment. I finished the last sentence and it felt so good and it felt right. So now I can actually start moving on to the next chapter. Hopefully the rest do not take this long
That's
to
awesome.
accomplish. And I got a couple more paragraphs for the anthology figured out, but most of my energy this past weekend went towards A Filthy Hunger. So some good news.
That's very cool, though. I'm glad you got. I know you've been, I
Thanks.
think, stuck on chapter 7 since we started, right? So,
Yeah,
so
six months. It's been insane. I don't know. Anyway, it's good. Good start. Good start to the summer.
No, congratulations. So
Thanks.
was that like very recent? Like, have you done it much more in A Filthy Hunger, or did you like finish chapter 7 and be like, okay, that's good?
That was yesterday. I
Oh, okay.
finished yesterday, so it is very, very fresh. Yeah, I have rewritten, I rewrote that chapter three separate times and none of it was working and none of it was just like in my gut feeling good. So this was the fourth rendition of that chapter and yeah, hit the final period on the last sentence and was like, you got it. This is it. And so yeah, it felt good. But yesterday it's crazy.
Very cool. Well, the reason I was asking this is because I was curious if this was going to give you like more momentum for chapter 8, 9, 10, or if it's going to be like still a struggle, because I find it varies for me. If I get stuck on a chapter, sometimes I'll still get stuck on the next one, or sometimes it gives me like a burst of writing momentum and I get through, the next few chapters quicker. So It'll be
This
interesting.
was this was yeah, this was my like millstone. This was like I need it. This is the I don't know, the best example, but now I'm good and now I know exactly what's going to happen in chapter 8 and what needs to happen in chapter 9. For some reason this chapter, and I think it was just a mental block of like this is the farthest you've ever gone,
Yeah.
and the moment you step after this chapter is like a whole new, I mean this is when the plot really starts to kick in and you have to be kind of on it. So it's give it I have momentum now and I feel more confident going into the next few chapters. And then also with the anthology, like I'm feeling the juices flowing, so it all works. I don't feel stuck or bogged down by what's to come.
That's all great to hear. I
Yeah, what
don't.
about you?
So I'm just gonna be completely honest. I barely wrote anything this past week
That's
because
okay.
I was in the office twice. I had a lot of work to do before the holiday weekend, and then my brother was moving for work, and he had to move really fast. So like I was just helping
Oh no.
all weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good news. He's getting a big pay increase. So yeah, great.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's
Congrats
great to
to him.
hear.
But
Yeah, no kidding.
it was just chaotic having to drive 3 hours both ways and then load up the moving
Jeez.
truck, get it unloaded. And yeah, so not really much time to write
Yep.
between all that and not enough mental energy to even try. But
That's totally okay.
sometimes that's how it goes. So I'm okay with it. Is
Exactly right.
I'm gonna hopefully get some good writing sessions and writing sprints this week.
Good.
And working on trying to set some new timeline goals for the anthology. I think I've heard a progress update from just about everyone, so I think I have an idea of some new deadlines we can all shoot for. Obviously,
Good.
it's not going to be, like a big deal if we miss it again. Like I said, I'm happy to delay it to,
Yeah.
prioritize everyone's mental health and things like that. But once we have a new target date, we'll definitely share that and then go
Yeah.
from there.
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah, slow week for me.
No, it's totally okay. Good luck on your move, Nicole. That's moving is no fun, regardless
Yeah.
of whether there's a pay increase or not. It's always just like, oh, so much work.
it's not fun. I've moved so many times, it never gets any better.
Never. There's no easy way to do it. You just have to do it.
Well, that's our work in progress check-in, so we can move on to our weekly writing topics. We have maybe too many topics here again, so I might need to move one again to next week. We'll
Yeah,
see
totally.
how quickly we get through them. But let's start with creating compelling characters. So one of the most important aspects of any story, at least to me, is the characters. I know some stories are more plot driven, some are more character driven. So some of the questions I have for you, what would you consider your style of writing to be? Like, would you say your stories are more plot driven, or would it be more character driven? And then in your writing and your reading, what makes a character compelling and interesting to you, like to write about or to read about?
Those are really great questions. I love plot. I am a diehard plot girl. There are very few character-driven stories that I connect to, only because I really enjoy feeling enmeshed in the world that I am reading in. So, to me, characters are obviously just as essential, but when I am reading, I want to feel like I am facing the dilemmas and the issues that the characters are feel are experiencing because of the world around them. Oftentimes what I see in new authors and something I work on with both the anthology story and A Filthy Hunger is making sure that things don't happen to my characters. And what I mean by that is that the plot doesn't just occur on top of them and then all of a sudden they are dealing with it. It's they need to feel like they are working through it, right? Like they are in the muck and in the mire of their world around them, and they're not just like, I can't believe I'm in this situation now. What do I do? It's they've got to have context. They have to have a history, even if you don't tell their history right away, their decisions have to come from somewhere, right? So it's a fine balance. I despite being a plot-driven reader, characters are still so essential and so important that they have to work almost perfectly together, right? Like, let's say Kara discovers a powerful object, right? Instead of just picking it up and being like, here's a powerful object. Well, how does she feel about it? Is that something she would even do? Would she even pick it up, right? Like, and if she didn't pick it up, why? What's the reason? Is she scared? Is she frustrated? So I want to feel a character that is well-rounded overall so that when they are moving through the storyline, things aren't just happening to them. It's they are having to work through it themselves. Did that answer the question?
Yeah,
I don't know.
totally. No, I think those are all great points, and I think it's important to say I don't think any story is like completely one or the other. It's kind of a balance
Right.
of, good characterization and then an interesting plot, because you could have a great plot and really shallow characters, or you could have really interesting characters and a really boring plot. So, there's definitely a balance to strike there. When I say plot
Yes.
driven versus, sorry, yeah.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, when I say like plot driven versus character driven, I don't want to get like too binary there, where it's like I'm saying
Sure.
it's one or the other, because it's definitely like a spectrum, I guess. It's a balance.
Yeah, 100%. So a great example of what I mean when I say that, because you're right, there is it's not like a one or the other. It's a mesh of both, some leaning more towards character-driven stories, and vice versa. When I read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, that book is about a bunch of gaming programmers and their lives over the course of like 15, 20 years. It focused primarily on the characters and their interactions with one another and their relationships, and the plot was kind of in the background, right? Like things occurred, but it was mostly about their internal dialogue, how they felt, how they interacted with one another. So that's kind of what I refer to when it's character driven. The plot kind of takes like a back seat or like a second, I can't, whatever. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. With plot driven, it's like the opposite, but it can be done so well either way. So I, yeah, that was my clarification too, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, for me, I think, like I said, I need a little bit of both. But I'm more ready to like excuse kind of a generic plot if I get to spend time with really interesting and well-developed characters. I think I definitely lean more towards the character driven stories, but I can read either. And I
So why
think
so why do you lean more towards character-driven stories just naturally?
So I don't really know. It's just what I
Oh, that's
enjoy.
okay.
Yeah. I don't really have a good reason other than it's just what I enjoy. I really like well-rounded characters who are, they have their own internal struggles, and I like to see a character grow from the beginning of the story to the end, in some way, and that, maybe they even, have like a tragic ending and the growth doesn't happen the way you expect. But I just like to see I like to see dynamic characterization. I don't really like a story where a character is kind of just the same all the way through. But yeah, no, I just like reading about interesting people.
Okay,
And
so here's a follow-up for you then.
yeah.
Would you consider Game of Thrones a character-driven story or a plot-driven story?
That's a good question, because that's one I would say it like the plot doesn't take as much of a back seat, I think, as people will say it does. Like a lot of people say it's character driven. I think the plot is kind of equally important, but it's hard because so much of the plot is driven by character actions and thought processes and things like that. So that's a difficult one to kind of pin down exactly how much it's plot driven versus character. I would say it definitely leans more towards character driven, but maybe not as much as some other people will say.
Interesting. Very cool.
I think you had some more follow-ups on that topic, though,
I
didn't you?
do. I'm trying to like you always have great questions to ask me, and I always feel bad because I don't really come with a lot of questions to ask you.
No,
So
don't feel bad.
I figured I would also add my follow-ups for you. So since we are talking about creating compelling characters, a bit of a shift. how much of yourself do you imbue in your characters, if anything at all? And are any of them influenced by any real people in your life? It doesn't have to be copy paste, but you know, I think influence is the best word I can come up with.
Yeah, I definitely put pieces of myself into kind of all of my characters. I think that's pretty normal. I try not to do self inserts though, where it's like this person's exactly like me. I'm not a fan of that. I just feel like it becomes, it's kind of obvious when that's happening, and I don't want my stories to feel that way. But I do think it's important that you imbue, you know, your own experiences, at least to a certain extent, you know, write what you know. So I try to take, you know, some of my own flaws and some of my own experiences and put them into each of my characters. I think if you were to look at anything I've written, whether it's in A Knight of Knives or something else that will come, you know, much later, you'll find most pieces of me in one of the POV characters. So it's usually going to be one of the, you know, the main characters, I guess you could say, just because I find it easier to write from their perspective when they have a little bit more of me in them. Again, not too much to where they become a self insert, but just enough that I feel comfortable in this character's head for long periods of time, because they're going to be, you know, the one who the story is told through mostly. So and then when it comes to putting other people into characters, I kind of try to take that same approach of, I don't want it to feel like this is, you know, an insert of someone that I know in real life. But
they call you out, they're like, hey.
It would be kind of awkward, and you know, there's, and then some of those, you know, come with like legal issues that you can run into, so I just, you know, I stay away from that. But I obviously the people I meet and the people I'm surrounded by inform my characters. I think that's pretty natural for everybody, but it's it's really just kind of like taking all these pieces, mixing and matching them, and then trying to make them interesting and make them work in a fantasy setting, and then making sure none of them feel copy and paste either from me or from someone else that I know. What about you?
No, pretty much exactly that. I definitely, there are bits and pieces of myself in all of them, good and bad, but no self inserts, like you said. No, oh, this is, I don't think anyone who knows me would read that and be like, oh, that's so Ash, you know. It just, you know, they'd be like, oh, I could maybe see her doing that, but I want them to feel authentically themselves and stand on their own. But yeah, like you said, like, of course we're going to be putting bits and pieces of our own experiences and own personalities in them. It's inevitable. They become a part of you, and they are, you know, because you've created them. So I think I find it actually easier to write my male main character than I do my female main character.
Oh, interesting.
Which is not, I think, the norm. Would, you know, I don't really know the psyche behind that. And actually, my therapist wanted to talk to me more about that at our last session. She was like, that's interesting. We should delve into that. And I just think, because to me, he, a lot of his like suppressed emotions in the beginning of this book are things that I have felt, you know, when I was younger. And though he is not younger, it reminds me more of myself in certain ways. So he, the way he acts and the way he moves around seems more authentically me, although he handles situations in ways that I would never even dare to handle them. So I'm curious if you have any characters that you find it easier to write or feel more connected to.
This is difficult, because with A Knight of Knives, I really only have, at least in book one, the two perspectives. And I would say, I would say Theron, you know, the Lord Protector, he's, I spend the most time with him and I find him the easiest to write from. But no, I wouldn't say like dramatically easier or harder than the other character, who I don't want to spoil who that is yet. But
you and your secrets, Brandon. You and your secrets.
I gotta save myself some marketing material when I actually do publish the book.
I get it.
All the details are gonna be out like 2 years before the book, and then it's...
No, I totally understand. I'm just giving you flack.
Sorry, but did I answer that question?
You did. You
Okay.
did. I think that was, yeah, we both seem to be on the same page with characters in general.
Well, I think we might have touched on this next topic a little bit before, but I don't know if we ever like did a deep dive on it. So, apologies if we're retreading some old territory here, but I wanted to talk about plotting versus pantsing. That's a, kind of one of the first things I see people, talk about themselves on BookTok when they're talking about their writing is whether they're a plotter or a pantser. I think most people understand it's kind of like a spectrum, like you either fall closer to one end or the other, but it's not really like black and white like most things. But I'm curious, what side would you say you're closer to, and how does that affect your writing?
Yeah, I'm a pretty a hard line plotter. I don't struggle with pantsing. I just want to, and I think this is like one of my follow-up questions to you, but I'm gonna, touch on it so we can combine both. But I don't have any problem diverting from the plot if it's written and I'm writing and I'm like, oh, this just doesn't work. It needs to be rewritten or reworked or adjusted in any way. I think that's the danger in being a plotter, is that sometimes people can get way too stuck on that minutia of what their plot line says, and that can restrict creativity. I don't find that the case with myself. I, despite being a very stringent plotter, I am totally okay with in the moment if something's not working, being like, that's on the chopping block and we're gonna get rid of it and we're gonna adjust accordingly. To me, it's good because I have two points of view, and I don't know if you feel the same way. It's really important to make sure that everything is running parallel correctly at the same time. And if I'm not keeping track of it, or keeping track of like something will happen to Kara, and then oftentimes I'll have a parallel, something happened to Voltaire, but if I don't make sure that that's tracked correctly, it can throw the plot off like 13 chapters later, some things need to be included, some things need to be revealed now, so that, et cetera, et cetera. So, in the initial draft, things have to be plotted pretty strictly. Some people are the opposite. Some people are full pantsers, and then they really, their editing process, I feel like, takes longer because then they're having to go back and readjust and move things around and et cetera. But yeah, that's, I'm a plot girl.
I think I'm a little, I'm in the middle, but I lean more towards plotter. Just because I don't like having to like do a ton of revisions as far as like plot structure and things like that go, which can happen if you're doing a lot of pantsing and, not outlining, which is totally fine. It works for some people. It just doesn't work for me. It stresses me out too much to try and fit all these puzzle pieces together. I like to do that work a ahead of time. Like to kind of see my ending and then see, the major beats along the way. I don't get too extensive with the outline. I like to leave myself some room for discovery, and, give not stick too closely to that. Like you said, like I'm not that strict and that I can't diverge from this. What's most important to me is that it makes sense, and usually the ending that I've planned out, I will very rarely diverge from that. So as long as I can still kind of land in the same place, then I'm okay with it. But also with the two POVs, like you said, getting like the pacing right and making sure things are happening in a believable way, that's also kind of an important reason why I plot, because I almost always write from multiple perspectives. So it's very hard to keep track of those if you are not plotting to like any extent at all.
And I wonder if, there's, not that we would know this off the top of our head or if it could be researched at all, but I wonder how many fantasy writers versus like romance writers versus fiction, like general fiction writers, what they prefer. If like the majority, I feel like the majority of fantasy has to be plotters only because it usually entails like more world building, and so it, to ensure you stay within those parameters. I feel like with maybe like romance writers, it can be a little bit more loosey goosey. Not that that's not a good, I mean, I think that's, I'm kind of jealous that I can't just be a plotter and write stuff down and see where it goes. But Yeah, I do think there's probably like a differentiation between genres in terms of who does what.
That's a good point. I've never actually thought of that.
We'll have to do a poll one day.
Yeah, do some research.
Yeah.
Sorry, did you have any follow-ups for that I missed before we move on to
I
the
think we covered it. Yeah, I think
cool.
that was included.
Yeah. Next one, this is either my favorite thing to write or my least favorite thing to write, depending on the day. Let's get into dialogue. It'd be very difficult to write a story without dialogue, but writing the dialogue can be tricky. So, how do you write dialogue that feels natural, and what advice do you kind of, I mean, follow yourself, but also would you give others who are writing dialogue?
I find dialogue to be one of the most challenging.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people would agree that that is the case. I consider myself a relatively like witty, smart person, but when writing through the voice of characters, it can be so challenging.
Yeah.
And not because, well, you have to consider, like, again, this is just coming from a fantasy genre perspective, but I'm sure other genres experience the same thing. When you're coming at it through a character where you have very little knowledge naturally of what they do, like, for example, Baltair's a spy master. I don't know spy craft, right? Like, I'm not, you know, he's also coming from like a place of authority, which I certainly am not either. So it can be really difficult. It can be sometimes very impossible. It's probably why chapter 7 took so long for me, because there it's an extremely dialogue heavy chapter.
Yeah.
And the balance with dialogue, in my opinion, is that you want to, like, the show not tell kind of component comes into play.
Yeah.
You can, if you do it well, the dialogue between characters can reveal so much more than four paragraphs of exposition. So yeah, I find it extremely challenging. I think my number one biggest trick to help a dialogue or a scene with dialogue feel natural is reading it out loud.
Yeah.
With the fantasy aspect, there's a little bit, I try to keep some like formal language, and there are words used that we don't use in our daily life, obviously. But I try and read it out loud, and I like to break up my dialogue. So it'll be like they'll start off the sentence, and then I'll cut in the middle of it and have them do an action, so it feels like you're like in the middle of them doing something,
Yeah.
and then continue the sentence. But again, it's not going to work unless I read it out loud. If I stumble over a word, if I have a hard time getting through a sentence for whatever reason, if I get mush mouth, then obviously that sentence or that portion of dialogue needs to be changed or go completely.
Yeah.
The second tip I have is to keep a graveyard of dialogue lines. You're going to cut. It's going to be edited out. Most of what you write will probably change by the end of your finished draft. So graveyards are essential, because a line of dialogue might not fit in this scene, but when you're struggling later on and you go through your graveyard, one might fit there. So yeah, those are my two tricks. What about you? Are you going to tell me that you're amazing at dialogue and it's the easiest thing in the world?
My skills with so when it comes to writing dialogue, I either feel like I do it really well or I suck, and it's nowhere in between, and it just really depends on the day and my mental state and things like that. I've written lines of dialogue where I'm like, "Ooh, that's really good," and then I've written lines of dialogue, conversations between characters where I'm like, "Nobody talks like this. This is stupid."
Exactly. So many
So.
factors go into writing dialogue.
Yeah, and it's so hard because there's so many things to consider, right? Okay, like this has to not sound like me. This needs to sound like this character who is, like you said, in a position that I have never been in. So you also have to consider what this character, like, they know things that I don't, but I know things that they don't. So it can't be too exposition heavy. There's so many layers to dialogue that I feel like make it challenging. But I liked your tips where you like break it up with actions. I think that's really good. Don't make the world freeze around them when they're having a conversation. When you said that, I thought of a video game that I used to play, an old one called Oblivion, where the characters it zooms in on their face and the entire world freezes while you're having a conversation. That doesn't happen, obviously, so you don't want your stories to feel that way, but And
Or
then,
like last week or the week before when you were like the said comments, right? Like
yeah.
he said, she said, he said, she said, like that people don't speak like that, right? Like there's
Yeah.
always something happening around them. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll just use said, like when I'm just trying to get the
Yes.
dialogue written, but I will always go back and change it if it's just said.
Yeah.
And I think the number one thing for me is just the same thing you said about reading it out loud. There's no real way to tell if it feels right until you hear it spoken. It might sound cringy, but you can act it out with people or with yourself. No one's gonna watch you. Ultimately, I found that to be like the most helpful in really deciding whether something feels like a natural flowing conversation or if it feels like an author telling people what to say.
Yeah, 100%.
So I, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. No, you go. Sorry.
I forgot where I was going with that. I was just saying like that's my number one way
Yes.
to see if I'm happy with the dialogue I've written.
Yep. No, I completely, I think that is a universal probably trick that everyone knows, but it is, yeah, the one like, yeah, read it out loud. Don't just read the dialogue either, but
Yeah.
you know, if you're confident in your, you know, descriptions of other things, then just, yeah, or like a, like you said, practice with somebody else. Be like, you read this person's lines and I'm reading this line and
Yeah.
let me know, you know, that way you can see if it reads naturally. But yeah, it's kind of, it's such a tricky thing. I hate it sometimes. God dang it, I have to write dialogue today.
I either love it or hate it. It's nowhere in between.
Yeah.
Looks like you have a follow-up for that though.
I do. I have a follow-up question. So, do you have a favorite author who does dialogue so well that that's like your inspo slash just someone that when you read them, you're like, oh, the dialogue is just so
It's pretty much just the authors that I already really enjoy, so the
good? Okay.
Martin and Abercrombie. I like their dialogue because they manage to say a lot with very few words. Like it feels like almost every line is multi-layered. Like there's the surface level of what it actually means in this conversation, but then it also reveals details about the character, and then sometimes there's even like foreshadowing in there, and I really admire their ability to do so many different things with such a like small amount of words. It feels like it's very, I don't know if it's intentional, but it comes across as like a mastery of the English language. So
Yeah, definitely.
that, and I think that's kind of why they're, other than their characters and their worlds being great, that's another reason why they're my favorite authors. So
Your
it's
favorites. Yeah, that
not
makes
really a
sense.
different selection, just kind of more the same. What about you?
That makes sense. Yeah, actually mine differ a little bit. Excuse me. I really love Terry Pratchett's ability to do dialogue. I don't know if you ever read any of his books. He
He's
unfortunately is
Discworld.
And he also co-wrote a lot of stuff with Neil Gaiman, like Good Omens. Which is hysterical. It's funnier. The book is funnier than the show if you haven't watched the but every time. But at least we know we have a we've got like 30 minutes left. Yeah, so Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman, both together and separate, I think are masters of dialogue. I think Neil Gaiman does it better only because he has written Sandman for how many decades now? In comic book form, which is really, I mean, he essentially obviously writes the plot as well, but because comics are so dialogue forward, when he writes his novels now, it just seems to just come from, I'm like, it's magic. I don't know how this man does it. So Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman for sure are my two like dialogue babes.
Unfortunately, I haven't read like much of Discworld, but I've seen snippets of it that always make me go like, I really need to read this because it looks
Oh,
good
it
and the
is.
dialogue stands out particularly, so.
Yeah, it is a whole beast of a series. There's like, I don't, oh my God, I need to look this up because how many books in the Discworld series? Also, I think Leigh Bardugo does like natural, like modern dialogue really well too.
Oh,
Oh,
okay.
yeah, okay, so. As of December 2023, there are 41 novels in Terry Pratchett's Discworld series. So,
Wow.
fair warning, once you begin, there's no going
Do you
back.
have to read them in order, or is it just kind of like,
You, I don't, from what I know, and I've only read a few, you don't need to because they
Okay.
jump characters. So
Gotcha.
a couple will follow one group and whatever, but they, because they exist in one universe, it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, if you want to read 41 books about a universe, they're all hilarious. It's like
Yeah.
both funny and sad and cute. Anyway, just definitely a good series overall.
Yeah, it's always kind of been in my reading backlog, but I had no idea there were so many books. But I'll definitely give one of them a
It's a
try.
lot. Yeah, you should.
All right, every fantasy author's favorite distraction from writing, I feel like, is world building, because it still feels like you're being productive, but you're also kind of not. I think it's safe to say that all fantasy writers enjoy world building. That's why we write fantasy. Everyone has their own unique approach, though, to how they create worlds, how, in depth they go with it. So I'm curious to hear your world building tendencies and habits. You look like you have something to say on this topic, so I'm gonna pass it on to you.
I actually don't.
Oh,
I'm just such like a scattered world builder. I
okay.
genuinely, for all of my plot, for all of my plot tendencies, it's hard because I actually feel this with A Filthy Hunger. I need to come up with some more originality. I need to do a bit more world building. I need to do a bit more like learning on
Yeah.
my end. I think next week I'm going to offer up some world building weekly writing resources because I struggle with it. I have a very general fantasy world building mind that is very heavily influenced by what is already out there.
Yeah.
I do throw a lot of like religious elements and like the religious aspects, and I have a very well fleshed out history of the world because I am a history person.
Yes.
So I have like an entire just like story of how the world came to be. But in terms of like, I think I mentioned her last week too. Like, I'm always impressed by Jordan because she creates like her own seasons and her own planets, and you know, the moon is not a moon, it is this instead, and
Yeah.
things work differently. So I'm very generic with mine, unfortunately. I don't have anything great to say about my world building.
Yeah.
It is a weakness of mine, only because it yeah, there's really nothing crazy unique. I throw a lot of folklore in there. There are a lot of creatures, there are a lot of we've got like, you know, sprites and goblins and imps and all these things that exist north of the border, I guess. And the magic system, I think, is pretty good. I don't think it's anything, it could be worked on. So, yeah, it is a work in progress for me, the world building. I have a general understanding of how my world works, how the parameters of the magic, the history, etc., the family lineages, but nothing so robust as to be like, this is how I do it, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm actually kind of in the same camp as you, so that's kind of relieving to hear, because like I had certain aspects of my world are very well fleshed out and I understand them very well, but then there's other things that are kind of just loose ideas in my head that I haven't really thought too much about because I haven't really needed to until where I am in the story. And so I do run into challenges sometimes where I'm writing and I'm like, I really need to flesh this part of, the lore and the world out a little more. And I really do enjoy world building. It's just I feel like some people are so like good at it. Like they're so organized. Like this is the language, this is, the culture. I have documents and folders for all of these, and most of mine's in my head. I have like scattered notes and documents, but they're not, they only make sense to me really. But yeah, I definitely have some learning to do on that front too.
I think I did like a last year, the year before, I can't remember. I did like a January writing kind of challenge thing where I created my own prompt list to ask questions about the world and asked other people to be involved, but no one really did it. And I got pretty granular. I got like the accents, you know, where people live, things like that, like this kind of like the seasons. But as you said, it's just kind of, it's really challenging. I don't really have enough space in my head right now to really get that deep, but
Yeah.
I feel like if I did, and I'm sure you feel the same way, the characters themselves would be more like more rich, and the plot itself would feel more grounded in reality, regardless of it like not being real, you know.
Yeah. Something I wanted to touch on too. I forgot it for a minute, but it just came back to me. It's something that Brandon Sanderson mentions, I believe, in his writing lectures in the world building sections, where it's very easy to get bogged down in thinking you need to flesh out every single detail of this world that you've created. And I think, from what I remember, I'm paraphrasing here, but he kind of cautions against that and almost encourages you to just do what you need to tell the story. And I've heard this echoed by a few different authors before, where it's like you don't need to have all the details figured out right away. One that comes to mind is George R. R. Martin, in one of his interviews, had mentioned that he didn't have a map for Game of Thrones. He just kind of knew the general direction of where things were.
Oh, interesting.
Kind of, I don't know if it was at like when he had finished book one or late into it, but it's one of those things that a lot of people like to do up front now, but it's weird to think of, like, he just kind of had general directions for things, which is kind of where I'm at right now too. But thankfully most of my book takes place in the same city, so that's easier. But no, I think it's easy to get bogged down in thinking you need to have all the details, you need to create, fictional languages and things like that. I definitely think there's a balance to actually writing the story and figuring out what does need a little more clarification and a little more background, versus like, do we really need to flesh out this culture that's way over here that we're not even going to deal with until book two right now? Or can we kind of just give some basic overview, and then when we get to book two, we can explore it further? Not everyone has to be Tolkien right now.
We don't need a Silmarillion for each of our novels. No, not at all.
If that is what you like to do too, that's also more power to you. Just, I think it's easy to get intimidated by thinking you need to have everything figured out and have an answer for everything. I forget who it was,
No,
but
I agree.
I forget what author, but in an interview, he had mentioned that people would, in his interviews, ask him questions that he himself didn't know the answer to, so he would have to make them up on the
Really?
spot. And then he was like, I just have to make sure I stay consistent with that now.
That is actually, that makes me feel so much better. Honestly, thank you for sharing that. And also thank you for reminding us about like other authors who have very arguably huge worlds that they have built for themselves and their novels that, yeah, sometimes it is just, you just get it down, you know, just kind of what we were talking about, the plotting and the pantsing earlier. Just get it down first, worry about all the details later. And I wonder, I think a bit of my follow-up kind of pulls into this, like how much we borrow from each other in terms of the world building itself. And I feel like in the realm of fantasy, everything tends to feel pretty familiar, right? Only because we are so influenced by, you know, the Lord of the Rings and G.R.R. Martin and all of these big guys who've kind of paved the way for modern fantasy. And I worry that kind of going back again to our earlier topic of industry trends and tropes that, you know, I don't want my world to be too tired. You know, I don't want it to be so boring, but I also do borrow from the big guys and the women of past, you know, fantasies because it's what I love and it's what drove me to start writing because I just was like, oh, I want to tell more of these stories. So yeah, that's yeah, it's a balance, I guess, but that is good to know that other guys are just like, I also don't know this answer to this question that you've asked me about my own world that I've just spent years writing
That was
about.
such it was such a relief to hear, because it might have been Joe Abercrombie, but I don't want to attribute to that to him for sure if it wasn't him. But no, it was a relief to hear that even the big name authors can just make it up as they go sometimes.
That is nice.
And I agree about like pulling from other fantasy. Like, you could, I think it goes back to, how do you make your world feel inspired without being like derivative or generic? And that's just, I think, something that comes with practice, really. I don't know. I mean, I know the earliest stuff I've written was very derivative, and I would never publish it. But I think just as you write more, you kind of develop your own unique style, and maybe your worlds are kind of generic, and that's not the draw for people. Like, you could have a generic world, but if your selling point is your characters and your plot, that can be fine. I mean, there's plenty of examples of that. So
Yeah, that's a great point.
I don't think every world needs to reinvent the wheel. I just think you need to know what your strengths are and focus on those. Like, mine is definitely not creating unique worlds. Like, I very much am a creature of habit. Like, I will stick to established trends. One thing I do try to avoid, like, I like the influence, but I try not to feel just like a medieval England copy and paste. I like to have a mix of cultures. That can be one of them, but it's not going to be the entire setting.
Agreed.
But yeah, it's definitely a difficult balance to
It's a
strike,
challenge.
and
It is.
comes with, I think, just comes with practice.
Yeah, I agree. That's great. That's a great positive note to end on with this topic. It's like, yeah, no, it's hard. And all of us are going through it, and so we're not alone in
Yeah.
the struggle of world building.
Well, we're getting ready to wrap up here, I think, but we have some resources, and I actually did find one this week, so
Nice.
I'm
Do
not
you want
gonna
to go
say books
first?
again. Sure. Oh yeah, I'll bring let me pull up the doc real quick. Mine is Campfire. So this is a tool that's kind of been on my radar for a while. I've used it a little bit in the past, but it coming off of that topic of world building, it's a perfect tool for if you struggle with organization and you kind of want to add that to your tool set. It has lots of tools for not just world building, like organizing, character information and plotting and world details, but it also has tools for writing. And I guess I just saw this today, but you can now publish directly on their platform.
Oh,
And you earn 80% royalties. So, and you can, and it's not
wow. No way.
exclusive. So you can publish on there and still publish on Amazon and whatnot, which I found
Whoa.
really interesting. They've definitely grown the tool significantly since the last time I used it, so I'll definitely be diving into it more in the coming
That's
weeks
great.
to see if it can maybe help with some of those world building issues I was talking about. But
That's amazing.
and they do have a free and a paid tier. So the paid one is a subscription, but you can dive in and try most of the features for free before you commit to anything. And I don't think it's terribly expensive, but that's my resource
No,
for the
that's
week.
excellent. Hell yeah, that's a great resource. I will definitely be looking into that for sure.
What's yours?
Okay, so I think I mentioned this last episode where I don't know how to write sword fighting or any type of like weapon-based fighting at all. And I, a couple weeks ago, found this website called ChristianCameronAuthor.com. And all he does is give short, like 2 minute or less videos on how to write fighting. And he shows you with his various weaponry how those moves look. So you can
Oh,
visually watch
nice.
it and then use those visuals to describe a fight scene or whatever. And it's great because, for example, he's got writing, fighting, drawing from the scabbard, shields, Viking style fighting, dark ages, like fighting in the dark ages, long sword fighting, long sword continued, basics, armor. Fighting in armor. So he's got that all broken down into very many. One is just like just murder. Like, how do you just murder somebody with a whatever? Anyway, it's an amazing resource. And it's like, I think right now at like 146 videos.
Oh, wow.
Again, very short, but you can find exactly what you're looking for if you are completely new, baby new to any type of writing at all. I have found them to be extremely helpful. Not just because he's explaining the why and the how, but because even if you just mute him, which I don't suggest you do, but let's say you're in a busy area and you just need to get a scene down, if you mute him and just watch him, it's just still such a great, you're seeing it in action and getting an explanation if you want to learn more. I like to watch, obviously, like Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, season 2's coming out, all these great sword fighting scenes, especially like the Battle of the Bastards, but it goes by so fast and it's so quick cut that it's really hard to you then use that and translate that into your writing. So this is really nice because they are slow and it's condensed and it's just perfect. Christian Cameron, Writing Fighting. That's my resource.
That's very cool because, yeah, I think writing fighting is something you can very easily get wrong and can very much hurt your fantasy novel. So I'll definitely be checking that out,
100%.
even if it's just to, even if I'm just watching just for fun. I think I will definitely be checking that resource out. But
Yeah, he's
thank you
super
for
knowledgeable.
sharing. Yeah, that's our weekly writing resources for the, I just said weekly, I don't know why I said for the week. Sorry, been a long day.
It's okay.
But I think it is just, well, we have one viewer, so I'll give them a second. If anyone has any questions or comments or feedback for the next episode, please let us know now and we'll make sure we address it.
Yeah, any topics to discuss in the future, or you want us to research, or are just curious about?
For sure. And like I said, we'll be working on getting those social media pages up as soon as we can. And I think that's all for me. Ash, do you have any closing thoughts for everyone?
No, just keep on writing. We're gonna do it. We're gonna get published regardless of how we do
We're
it.
gonna
It'll
do
get
it. Yep.
done.
Well,
That's all I got.
I don't see anything in the chat, so I think we're good to sign off. Thanks so much, Ash, as always, for
Sounds good.
hosting with me, and I will see you next week.
Sounds good. Bye, everybody. Bye, Brandon.
Bye.